I'm Mary Ellen. I'm an anorexic bulimic.
Hi, Mary Ellen.
And I haven't told my story in a long, long time, so I have no idea what will come out. But so they say to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So I started to use food at a very, very early age to feel better. And that was a pretty creative thing to do as a kid. There was no other way to get around it. I was living in a lot of violence and abuse, and there was really no way to get out of it. And so what I did was eat. And I ate secretively, and I ate a lot, and I never ate anything healthy. And I knew I was different really early on in that regard. Like, I didn't see my brothers and sisters sneaking around with stuff. And on holidays, like on Halloween, I would just rip them off after we all went trick-or-treating, or on Easter. So those holidays I'm still very, very sensitive to. But essentially what I did was I just wanted to feel better. I just wanted to feel safe. I just wanted to feel okay, and I didn't. And this really is a progressive illness. It's physical, emotional, and spiritual. And in all of those ways, my disease progressed rapidly. So by the time I was in kindergarten, I was wanting not only to eat, but to go to sleep. You know, anything to just get out of what was so awful. And then by the time I was in grammar school, I would come home and just make concoctions. You know, I knew it was odd. I knew it was odd to be getting home and hit the pantry and start making huge amounts of something just for me and hide in a closet to eat it. But I didn't know, I didn't make the connection that that was trying to do something to feel better or trying to do something to feel safe. And of course, food cannot provide that. It's not what it's for. So by the time I was in high school, things were really pretty bad at home, and I noticed that I had never been fat, but I noticed that I was getting fat, and I hated myself for that. I just hated myself, and I used to take three different things on the T. I'd take the bus to one place, the train to another place, and the train yet again to another place to go to school, and in between each of those stops, I would stop to get something to eat. Because the thought of going home was just beyond belief for me. And I felt like I had to pad myself up before I went home so I could tolerate what was coming at night, because it was predictable. Every single night, the same kind of things would happen. And what I realized one time was I just couldn't stop doing that. Now I'm in an all-girls high school where people are all about being skinny and looking good and, you know, putting on makeup and blah, blah, blah. And I couldn't stop eating. I couldn't, like, pass the sub shop. I couldn't pass the pizza. I couldn't pass the candy shop. And then I think it was my second year in high school, I got a job for the Easter season in a candy shop in my neighborhood. And, I mean, it was pig heaven for a compulsive eater. It was like, woohoo, because this was like homemade candy. But it was also hell. And so my job was to, they had these custom-made Easter eggs, and my job was to write your name on the Easter egg, and I just thought it was great. So I have all this frosting, you put it in this big bag, and you go, okay, I'm going to write Jennifer, J-E-N-N-I-F-E-R. And I just loved it. Plus, they told me I could have all the candy I wanted. Now, meantime, you know, trying to reconcile that with how much I hated myself every time I ate something, I just couldn't do it. I'm 14 years old with a 14-year-old brain that's trying to, like, survive in violence, make sure everyone else survives in the violence, and go to school and get A's and smile. It's, like, just way more. Like, how much can you do before you just lose it? And I had a strong faith. I have to say that. I really, really believed that there was a higher power. And I never got upset that my higher power wasn't making things better or helping me out. I did pray that I would be adopted, but that didn't happen. So so in terms of numbers, I've been anywhere from 15 pounds heavier than this to 35 pounds lighter than this. And having been sexually abused, one of the ways that I tried to deal with that was not only to eat, but then to stop eating. Because I just believed that if I was invisible, I wouldn't be attractive to any perpetrators. Well, I was never attractive to a perpetrator anyway. I mean, perpetrators have their own issues, and it's got nothing to do with the person they're harming. But I weighed 35 pounds less than this. And nobody asked questions. Nobody asked me any questions if anything was wrong, you know. And I think part of that is I had a really good facade. My family is also really involved in politics, so I learned early on to keep the facade. And so I did that. Plus, I thought that was how you're supposed to be in life. You're just supposed to be happy and smiling, even though I wasn't. I thought I was supposed to be. So I did well in school. I did well at anything outside of my house, anything. It was just a relief to be outside of my house. And then I went into a profession. I went into the healthcare profession. And I think the first person that ever mentioned something to me that they noticed something that was wrong was in my second year in nursing school. This instructor said to me, we're on the wards doing clinical, and she said, I'd like to see you after we get off the wards. And I said, okay. And the minute she said that, even when somebody today says to me, I'd like to see you, I start brewing an ulcer. You know, I get really, really, really scared. And they might want to see me just to say hello. I don't know. But anyway, she wanted to see me. So I went to see her, and she said, you know, I'm really worried about you. And my heart is palpating, and I said, what's the matter? And she said, I'm very, very worried about you. You excel clinically, you excel academically, but you try too hard. And I thought it was all about trying. You know, I thought, you're like, the more you try, the better it is. And she said, I think you should get some help. Now, I'm from an Irish Catholic Boston family. Help is not a word in the vocabulary. I was like, oh, my God. So I just tried harder. Like, it was lost on me. Her whole suggestion was lost on me. And that was probably, I don't know, 44 years ago or something. I don't know. And I kept trying harder. And it took a long time for me before I fell flat on my face. But I did. So finally, I was involved with a guy that was an alcoholic, and he went into treatment, and they called and asked if I would go into the treatment program as a family member, and I said yes, and I went. And I was very fortunate because I still couldn't put together that my eating was not the problem, but I did know that it was giving me some solace. I did know that it was giving me some relief, I would say, relief, because there's just this burst in relief. It's addictive. I mean, at one point, somebody just said to me, for your abstinence, you just can't throw up. And I was like, and that was so hard for me, because the relief that comes in throwing up, or the relief that comes in binging. But anyways, I went to this program, and I was very lucky. I came into three programs that week. And I'm really glad that happened, because I think I would have been resistant to other programs that I needed. And it also has just been a way of life for me, so I'm never really worried about how many meetings I go to, when or where, or any of that. And this woman told me how to eat, and I did, and I came home. But what happened was, all I had changed so far was a food plan. You know, she told me what to eat. But I brought the person in the doors that I was. So I was trying too hard. I would be anyone that could abuse me. So I listened to people tell me things in here that were, like, so wrong. I tried to be a good girl. I didn't tell the truth because I thought, you know, you don't make waves. And so I was here in OA, and I was doing the best I could. But I fell flat on my face after 2 years, and I ended up in a treatment center in Florida. And essentially they said, you know, we have to take you and unblank you from Boston OA. And I was horrified. But the thing was, I wasn't doing things to get well. I was doing what I was told to do, not to eat. Well, my problem was not eating. My problem was I had a much deeper spiritual and emotional illness, much, much deeper. So I came home, and I had to create a program that would work for me, or they helped me create a program that would work for me here. And it wasn't about rules or regulations or who agreed with you or who didn't. It was about seeing a nutritionist and having a food plan, and that's taken care of. And now, how am I going to address the issues that started way back when I first started getting relief from food? All of that had to be healed, all of it. And so it's decades later, and a lot of it has been healed, but I'm still that person in many, many ways, and I will still always be that person. The difference is that generally I'm not eating over those things, or, you know, overworking, or obsessing about my body, or thinking about how much I could weigh before this wedding on July 9th, or how much do I want to weigh, any of it. And I still struggle with those things, you know, and I am who I am. I have an eating disorder. I will always worry about my body to some degree or other. The days I don't are a bonus. I will always want to be skinnier. The days I don't think that is a bonus. But more than that, I feel comfortable with who I am. And I guess the best achievement that I've had in my recovery is that I am really okay with the imperfection of my recovery, that I'm not trying harder. I'm just not. I cannot afford any more in my life to try harder. It just got me to hell and back. So I do the things on a daily. I work the steps, and when I first came in, I got the tools down. You know, like going to meetings. I went to a million meetings, talking to other people on the phone. You know, calling a sponsor, having a sponsor, calling a sponsor, all of that. And those things really helped me to get my life in order, because my life was very chaotic. Those things helped me to get my life in order. The steps are what really helped me to start spiritually and emotionally getting my life in order. And it's been a very, very slow process. You know, I did not grow up being allergic to foods. That's not my story. I grew up wanting relief. I just wanted it. And then I became an addict. And as an addict, I just wanted to feel better, period. That's all I wanted. And today in my recovery, even emotionally and spiritually, it's not about feeling better. It's about being content. You know, there's a big difference for me between feeling better and being content. Being content is like just being where I am. You know, like some moments are okay, some aren't so hot, but it's where I am and like being there. And not like spewing off 92 things I'm grateful for to feel better, because that's just like my bulimia. It's so much like my bulimia. But generally being grateful. And there's this part in the big book. I love this part. It's in the doctor's opinion, and it says, it talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic and how we're just, you know, we're totally doomed. And it says, on the other hand, and strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple steps. And so that really is the crux of my recovery. The only thing that's required is that I continue to work the steps. And I will say I have no desire not to do that, because the alternative is way too scary to me. I don't want to go back to sleep again. I want to keep waking up. I mean, there's so much for me to learn every single day. I want to keep waking up. And the other thing that's been across the board true for me in my recovery is I have always gotten what I needed. Always. I've gotten the right people. I've gotten the right places. I just have continuously been given what I need, whether it's the guts to walk through something, whether it's, you know, a wake-up call that I'm too tired and I just better hang out and go to sleep, whether it's, it doesn't matter. Whatever I need, I get. So my priority in the day is prayer and meditation. And I love in the AA 12 and 12, it says the first benefit of meditation is emotional stability. Well, I'm not a person that had emotional stability. And if the book says this will be the first benefit, I'm like, okay, I can be quiet. I could just like be quiet and breathe. Excellent. And it's amazing how that works for me. And it's been my priority for years now. I have a food plan that I follow, and it's that simple. It's from a professional. I don't tell people what to eat. I don't really talk to people about food. But I do always ask for help throughout the day. There's not one day that goes by that I don't ask another person in the program for help in one way or the other. And I try my best to be genuinely grateful, you know, just genuinely grateful. And that works. And I guess the other tried and true thing for me is that I do know the number one offender for me is resentment. It's the one thing that will get me to the bottom the quickest. And I can't afford to be resentful. So praying for people that I resent has been a huge part of my recovery. So being grateful and praying for people I resent. And there are people that I accept now that I might not, you know, feel great about, but that I resented for years, that I hated for years, but I pray for them, and suddenly it's neutral. And the bottom line, the bottom line is it probably was never hurting them, but it was killing me. I mean, the more I chew on those bones of negativity, it just does not help. So today, a lot of the parts of my past have been healed. A lot of the parts of my past have just been accepted, and it's what it is. I'm pretty much comfy in my skin. I'm confused a lot in life, and that's fine with me now. I don't need to know everything. And I think just being on a spiritual path at times is confusing. You know, it's part of, like, waking up. Each time you're like, oh, I didn't know that either. And but the best part is I'm alive, you know, so I have a fighting chance each day. And I could have easily, I mean, I teetered with suicide frequently before I got here. And I'd like to mention one other thing that's very, there's this very strong connection with alcoholism, addiction, and depression. And I've struggled with depression my whole life, ever since I was little. And I thought I got into recovery, but one of the big misnomers for me was I thought, wow, I get into recovery, life's just going to be like, woohoo. Well, it hasn't been like that for me, and I have had depression off and on in my recovery and have gotten the help I need for it. But just to say that, again, it's part of who I am. It's part of my package. We all have a different package. You know, I feel like I'm a lot like everybody else on Earth, and yet I also have my own little package that has to be unwound. And, yeah, so I don't have to try harder with that either. If I'm not feeling particularly great on a certain day, that's just where I am that day. It'll pass. It all passes. One day, one time, somebody told me, you know, I was having a really hard time, and she's like, I promise you it'll pass. And then she said, and the good things will pass. And I was like, damn, you know, that shouldn't happen. But it does. I mean, me as an addict, I just want it to be good. So anyways, that's it for me, and thank you.